Now you need 1 to 2 minutes of a person talking and you've got their voice. And you can now clone their voice and get them to say whatever you want. And that is very worrisome. You don't have to have a PhD in computer science to do this. We've got to be aware of the risks in cyber.
Welcome back to Table Talk. I'm Vivian from Senator Glaser's team. The Senator will be back next week hosting the episode, but we wanted to bring you a quick episode in the meantime about scams, how artificial intelligence and evolving technology is making it easier for scammers to pull off schemes, and what you can do to stay alert and safe. For this episode, I sat down with UC Berkeley professor Dr. Hani Farid, who researches scams and AI. He's a member of the Berkeley Artificial Intelligence Lab, among other appointments, and is a senior faculty advisor for the Center on Long-Term Cybersecurity. His research focuses on a variety of security-related issues, including misinformation and human perception. Here's our interview. The first question I have is, I've been reading a lot about scams, and a lot of us have experience with those like old kind of phishing scams where they say they're like your relative or something like that. But how have scams gotten even more sophisticated with AI, and what are you seeing a lot of these days?
Yeah, I like this question. So first of all, the scams aren't new. We've been having them as long as we've had, well, even before there was technology, there were scams, and technology, of course, made them more global and more nefarious and more effective, and to the tune of, you know, trillions of dollars a year. And you're absolutely right that we're all used to now getting phone messages from somebody claiming to be somebody and not. And now what we're seeing AI powered is two things. One is that the traditional scams are being powered by AI bots. And so that just means you can do more of them. There's less human intervention. And so that means they're proliferating even faster and further. But we're also seeing AI, particularly generative AI, being used to mimic people's voices and to mimic their likenesses. So for example, it is now not uncommon for people to get a phone call from who they think is their loved one saying, I've been in an accident, I've been arrested, I've been kidnapped. And it sounds like their son, daughter, mother, father, et cetera. And then send money to this place. And we're seeing that being a pretty effective tool. We're seeing videos online purportedly of Elon Musk, purportedly of newscasters hawking cryptocurrency, government rebates, and ridiculous scams that people are then clicking on and falling for. So all of this is part of a continuum, but the realism, you know, getting a voice call from a loved one in the middle of the night, that's new, and that's really, really compelling. And so it's a troubling trend. And 2 years ago, the ability to clone a person's voice was really quite difficult. You needed hours and hours and hours of audio. Now you need 1 to 2 minutes of a person talking, and you've got their voice. And you can now clone their voice and get them to say whatever you want. And that is very worrisome.
Yeah, I mean, that is the part that really scares me, because it seems like it's very easy to just gather someone's voice from like a Instagram video or something like that, and then quickly come up with this. Like, I think I saw a video of someone doing that in like a couple minutes.
Oh yeah, it's literally a couple minutes. You record, like, I could be recording you right now. In fact, I am recording you. And I could take that audio, upload it to a service that I pay $5 a month for, clone your voice in 30 seconds, type, and generate an audio of you saying anything I want. And yeah, it literally takes minutes. Wow. And no technical skill. I should add the other part. You don't have to have a PhD in computer science to do this.
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of these programs, that's not like the people that are, or the scammers are developing a program and then using it. It's programs that are just available to anyone, right?
Yes, 100%.
So how do you see, or I guess, let me back up a little bit. I read an article about banks and how banks are being attacked by these kinds of things. And people will call and say, I'm this person, I need access to my account, I need you to transfer this money. What's the kind of organization side of it, or big corporation side of it?
So we're seeing the attacks in three major pillars, if you will. The one we just talked about are very personal attacks, phishing scams, going after individuals. We're seeing disinformation campaigns around, for example, the election. Hot mics of Joe Biden, Donald Trump saying this, Ron DeSantis saying that. So trying to interfere with our elections. And then we're seeing attacks on our institutions at the enterprise level. As you just said, banks have historically used voice recognition, voice biometrics to authenticate customers. So customer calls, they can record their voice. And then when they call again at a future time, they can say, that doesn't really sound like them, or it sounds like them. Those technologies simply don't work anymore. Voice biometrics are not a useful tool anymore in this day and age of generative AI, and banks have to start pivoting, and they already have, by the way, to acknowledge that they cannot solely rely on the voice. It's fine to keep it in there, but understand that just because the voice print says yes doesn't mean that's an authentic person.
Mm-hmm. Are there any ways that AI is being used to authenticate voices and kind of like AI duels where one is being used to fight the other?
100%. Yes, it is. In fact, we have developed technology that is AI-based and some non-AI-based technologies that ingest, for example, lots and lots of examples of fake audio, lots and lots of examples of real audio, and then it learns statistical, semantic, context differences between those two. So I'll give you an example. We know that today's generative AI tends to have a very regular cadence. The spacing between the words is very regular, much more regular than when I would talk naturally, and sometimes I speed up and sometimes I slow down. Here's another example. The volume on AI-generated audio tends to be fairly constant, but your readers won't be able to see me, but I have a microphone in front of me, and I will occasionally lean back, and I'll occasionally lean forward. And that means the volume of my voice will change a little bit. Sometimes I'll just raise my voice because I want to emphasize something. And so we can learn those differences between real and fake audio and use AI against AI. Now, of course, they then can take our AI and fight us. And now it's the cat and mouse game that is spam, viruses, and malware. This is cybersecurity, right? It's an inherently adversarial system. You build a better mousetrap, I build a better mouse, and we keep going. But that's okay, because what's going to happen is we're going to take out of the hands of the average person, the 15-year-old who goes to a web service and creates a fake audio, we're going to take that out of their hands, and we're going to make it increasingly more difficult, more time-consuming, and more expertise required to create a compelling fake. And that's sort of where you land, and that's where we've landed with spam and viruses and malware. They still exist, but we have a reasonable control over them.
Do you think that catch-up period of responding to malware and stuff, has there been a change that you've seen in how long that takes, or is it kind of consistent?
No, it's a great question. In the early days of malware, it took a long time to catch up. You know, these things would be out there, and they'd be out there for weeks and months, and millions of computers would be infected. You know, we have really good responses now. You know, as soon as this stuff happens, we figure this out, everything gets patched, emergency patches, everybody upgrades their system, and people know to do that. I don't think we're quite as mature in the generative AI space, and because there's just not as much folks working at the corporate, at the private sector level, but we're getting pretty good at it. The generative AI space is moving very, very fast. Almost every month we see big strides forward. And so this will be a challenge. I think eventually things will settle down. We will hit a plateau, and then the improvements will be more incremental. So we're in this very rapid growth rate. Eventually things will settle down, and then we'll probably end up in a fairly similar place that we have with spam and malware.
Well, that's somewhat relieving to hear. So when it comes to kind of personal awareness and what I should tell my family members and all of that, what do you tell people in terms of like being prepared for facing a scam like that?
Here's the first thing is you got to be aware that this stuff is out there. You just got to know that people can clone your voice, they can clone your video, they can make fake images. Just be aware of it. Now, I don't think we should overreact. I don't want people to get phone calls from their loved one being like, this is a scam, and hang up on them. That's not a good response either. So we don't want to underreact and we don't want to overreact. So awareness is really important. Here's the other thing. Audio scams are easy to protect yourself against. And here it is. You need a code word with your family. My wife and I have a code word, right? If I get a phone call from her or she gets a phone call from me and we say we're in trouble, we just ask, what's the code word? And by the way, every once in a while, you got to test them in the morning, make sure that they remember the code word, because it's not like a password that you use a lot. So you can just have a code word. It's a really low-tech solution to a very high-tech problem, right? Because so much of our personal information is either freely available or has been stolen through data hacks. And so the fact that so much information about ourselves is out there makes the attack vector for the bad guy much, much easier. And then generative AI is being used to power on top of that.
Yeah. Is there anything that you recommend in that sphere? Like, I guess maybe keeping your Facebook profile private or anything like that?
Well, first of all, get off of Facebook, get off of Instagram, get off of all of it. It's all awful. I mean, for other reasons, by the way. But I would say, sure, do all that, but it's probably too late. You can protect yourself a little bit by controlling your sort of public persona on social media, but data hacks are going to happen. In fact, they happen every day. And so there's only so much you can do. So I think you can do sort of bare minimum, protect yourself, good password managers, keep yourself fairly private, don't post photos of your children, and you know, and but at some point there are limits to what you can do if you're going to be on the internet, and we have to acknowledge that.
Yeah. There was another scam that I recently heard about that was, it was like a foreign exchange student, and he had, did you hear about this one? It was like kidnapping.
It was awful.
So that was kind of an example where it's like the scammer is remote and then scamming both the kid and his family separately. And like they told him to go out into a remote location and take pictures as if he was had been kidnapped. And then they were sending those pictures to the family, and it was like this whole thing. I mean, that seems like a very difficult situation to avoid. Like, what would you suggest?
I completely agree. And, you know, particularly kids who are vulnerable, they're young, they don't have a lot of experience, they panic, they overreact, they underreact. They're not American citizens, so they're scared maybe of law enforcement. And so the best we can say here is we need to publicize these widely so that people are aware of these attacks, so that when they get that phone call, they're like, wait a minute, I read about this kid in California this happened to. So there's not a lot you can do to protect against this other than making sure that people know about it. And again, I don't want to scare the bejesus out of people. I don't want people just being like, oh, well, I can't leave my house. But I think you got to be aware of the risks out there. And just in the same way that we're aware of the risks in the physical world, don't go out at 2 in the morning down a dark alley. We've got to be aware of the risks in cyber. And so without everybody panicking, we've got to sort of create good awareness. And so this conversation we're having is part of the solution.
Mm-hmm. So aside from all of the scariness of this conversation, what are some things that you think are like making great strides or working to protect us in artificial intelligence? Or what should we be excited about or hopeful about in that space?
I think there's a lot to be excited about, there's a lot to be concerned about, and there's a lot of uncertainty. Where I'm most excited about AI these days is in the medical space, diagnosis. So we are seeing really amazing breakthroughs in using AIs to do CT reading fMRIs and x-rays, and really sophisticated things that are difficult for humans to do. I think that's really exciting. Particularly in terms of our overall health. I think that's neat. I think there are aspects of AI that are concerning in terms of job loss. I don't think anybody fully understands what this is going to mean to the workforce. Are we going to replace jobs? Are we going to augment jobs? Are we going to only simply displace, so these jobs will go away, but these better jobs will come along? And I think that's a big X factor here. And then, of course, there's a lot of the clearly nefarious, bad, nasty stuff that people are doing with AI. And I think there's things in each of the buckets, bad stuff, uncertain stuff, and good stuff. And so I think the way I think about this is we should embrace this technology like we embraced computers, like we embraced the internet, like we embraced mobile. But I think we should learn from the past and understand that not all technology is inherently good or neutral, and put the proper safeguards in place. And that means our senators, our legislators, our regulators, our courts have to get smart very, very fast. And we've got to figure out how to put proper guardrails in so this technology can work for us and not against us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's like one other aspect to it, I guess, is, I mean, you're an expert in this who studies this. How do you educate someone who is a legislator, or it's their job to kind of like know all this stuff, but maybe can't spend their life studying it?
And this is hard, and it's hard for two reasons. Because you have generally smart people who are informed and curious and want to learn about this stuff, but they're not mathematicians, they're not computer scientists, they're not engineers, and this stuff is really hard, number one. Number two is, you know, I do briefings at the state level, at the federal level, at the EU level all the time, but in 6 months, I got to go back. And I got to tell you something completely different. And so it's a very fast-moving space. Also at the judicial level, how are our courts going to reason about this? You know, every few months, there's new advances here. So it is a really big challenge. But I don't think that means we just give up. I think we have to have these conversations. And I think us academics, the engineers, have to get out there and talk to our legislators and talk to the public, like this conversation right here, because we have a responsibility to make sure that we are informing everybody else, from the consumers to the regulators to the judicial system, so they can reason about what is happening. And honestly, I don't think we did a good job of this in the first 20 years, dealing with computers, mobile, internet, social media. I think we largely buried our head in the sand and hoped for the best. And I think we all woke up, you know, and we're like, yeah, this is not great. And so let's learn from that mistake. Let's do better this time.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to this conversation and to the podcast?
I'll add one thing here, which we haven't talked about. So we've talked about consumers. We've talked about the judiciary. We've talked about our legislators. But we have not talked about the CEOs of the tech companies. And they don't get off the hook, right? They've got to do better too. I mean, the age of move fast and break things is long over. And these CEOs have to start taking responsibility to the fact that their technology is being misused. The folks who have made us a service that allows me to clone a voice and all I have to do is click a box to say I have permission to it have responsibility. The folks who have done AI-generated images that is being used to create non-consensual sexual imagery and disinformation campaigns have responsibility. The social media companies that allow this content to proliferate and to be amplified have a responsibility. And we have got to start holding these CEOs to more responsibility because they are privatizing the profits and socializing the costs. And that should not be acceptable.
Yeah, that's something that I was reading about recently in terms of social media and the kind of struggles that have been happening in order to hold social media companies liable for the harm that is now proven to happen for especially young kids on social media. How do you see that happening and do you see it happening?
So I take some comfort here because the conversation 10 years ago was there's no harm, social media companies are not responsible. And today, largely we acknowledge there is harm. There's good, nobody would deny that, but there's harm. And the conversation most recently is, yeah, the social media companies have some responsibility. And I think a lot of the protections that have come from Section 230, the Communications Decency Act, which is a federal law that gives wide protection to social media company, I think our judiciary and our legislators are starting to realize that umbrella is way, way, way too large. Yes, you are not responsible if somebody says and does something awful on your service. That's okay. But you are responsible if you design a product that is addictive and by design harmful. And I think what you are seeing now are lawsuits at the state level and multi-jurisdictional level that are starting to hold these companies responsible for design decisions that they made that are harming children and adults. And I think that we are moving forward, we are going to do better. The same way we did in the product liability space in the physical world. It is not acceptable anymore for a company to create a product that when I put in my pocket explodes and harms me. Nobody accepts this, but we've accepted it in the digital world for too long. And I think the tide is turning. I think people are starting to realize that this is not an unintended consequence, that this is the harm is by design to maximize profits and the companies have to own that and we have to hold them responsible. I reject the idea that if we hold companies responsible for creating safe products, we will not innovate. It's simply untrue. That is not true anywhere in the physical space. We are great innovators here and we can create safe products. And I think we have the same responsibility in the digital space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, that is a common argument I hear is that while if we make it too difficult for companies to make a product and make all these laws about how safe it has to be, then they won't do it. But
yeah, it's a total lie. And here's how you know it's a lie. Do you know what it takes to put a car on the market? How it has to be crash tested to oblivion to make sure it's safe? Airplanes, food, pharmaceuticals, any product that you buy has to be tested and designed to be safe. We're innovating all the time. I reject this idea. And I think it's a lie that is done so that they can maximize their profits and socialize the costs. And I think we should wisen up to this.
Thanks to Professor Hani Farid for joining me on this episode of Table Talk. My big takeaways from this interview were how important it is to be aware of your surroundings when it comes to staying safe in a digital world. That means paying attention to what you share online and how accessible it is to others, reading the news to know what's happening and what kinds of scams are being used, and coming up with a code word so you can quickly double check if you get a call that someone might be in trouble. But before I close out the episode, I wanted to share some other ways you can protect yourself and your loved ones from becoming a victim to these kinds of scams. And if you want to do some research yourself, a good place to start is with the Federal Trade Commission. You can find their tips on how to avoid a scam at consumer.ftc.gov/articles/how-avoid-scam. Now, according to that FTC site, the best things you can do to make sure you're not getting scammed is to slow down and double check a few things before making any decisions. The FTC says it all comes down to four main things you should do if you're ever contacted by a potential scammer. First, is the person on the phone or in the email or text message saying they're from an organization you might know? This can look like someone calling and saying they're from your bank or from the IRS, and the FTC says scammers can even change their caller ID to make it look real or use an almost exact replica email address. So, for example, if someone calls saying they're from your bank and it seems a little off, it's always a good idea to say you'll call back and then use the direct phone number listed on the back of your bank card itself. The second red flag the FTC says consumers should be aware of is that scammers will present either a problem or a prize. That could sound like them saying you're in trouble with a government agency like the Social Security Administration or the IRS, or that a loved one has had an emergency, or that there's a problem with your account somewhere. Or they could also say you won a prize like a sweepstakes or the lottery, but that you have to pay a fee to get it. Then the FTC says scammers might pressure you to do something about whatever the issue is right away. They might tell you not to hang up or threaten to arrest you or to take away a license, anything they can do to make you feel pressured to give them the information they want. And then finally, the FTC warns that scammers will ask you to pay in a specific way that might seem out of the ordinary. Things like using cryptocurrency or a payment app or putting money on gift cards. Some scammers even send you checks and tell you to deposit them, then send them the money. So, other than being aware of all these things, what can you do to lessen the chance of getting contacted by scammers in the first place? The FTC says that a good place to start is blocking unwanted calls and text messages using your phone's settings. And they have a whole page of details on how to do that on their website, but it really comes down to going into your phone settings and making sure you select where you need to block unwanted or spam calls. They also say it's a best practice to never give out personal information in response to a request that you aren't expecting, like an out-of-the-blue call or text. And they say it's important to resist the pressure to act immediately and to know the signs of how scammers ask you to send money. And most of all, they say it's a good idea to stop and talk with someone you trust before you do anything. That can mean calling a relative or a friend or a neighbor. Just basically talking about it out loud might help you realize there's something off about the situation. So if you'd like to learn more about how to protect yourself from scammers, the main landing page of the FTC website has some great resources. You can find that at consumer.ftc.gov. Thanks again for listening to this episode of Table Talk. If you enjoyed the episode or learned something, share it with a friend and send us your feedback on our website. Senator Glazer will be back next week when we share another surprising story.